Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We're joined this week by Bruce Feldman. Bruce is going to be on the sidelines for Fox this Saturday for Ohio State Army, which leads into USC Texas. He's also a writer for Sports Illustrated. Bruce, how's everything going this week?
Very good. Good to be on with you.
So Ohio State is obviously coming off a loss to Oklahoma. In your opinion, do you think it's going to be maybe a mirror of 2014 where they lost early to Virginia Tech and rebounded to go on that big, like, famous national title run? Or did you observe this as a game where maybe they're not quite as good as we've been accustomed to them being the last few years?
You know, I think the biggest difference between that from 3 years ago and now is just that was the beginning for JT Barrett. And I think what has given people a lot of concern, certainly Ohio State fans, is you would expect some kind of learning curve at that stage of his career. You know, he hasn't progressed much as a downfield passer. Now, I wouldn't write him off. I mean, he's still a talented quarterback. He's very good in the run game. He's a great leader. But I think some of the issues also are the receivers have not developed. They had a lot of high-profile recruits, and there's a lot of speed, and they're an impressive-looking group, but you're not sure how well they deal with zone coverage, and that's been an Achilles heel, and that Oklahoma exploited to some degree. I think another thing to keep in mind, a few years ago, that group had a pretty inexperienced offensive line, and where they were from the beginning of the year when Virginia Tech and Bud Foster really exposed them in that game to where they were at the end of the year, where they were terrific, they went a long way. And who knows, maybe this offensive line will do that. I'd also, say this. Ezekiel Elliott, people remember, you know, how great of a player he was as a rookie for the Cowboys last year and the run he went on in the playoff. He wasn't even, like, third-team All-Big Ten the year they won the title. At the end of the year, he was phenomenal. You know, ran all over Oregon, ran all over Alabama, ran in Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. But, you know, so they got a lot better as the year went on. I think this team will improve a lot. But the big question is, you know, is JT Barrett going to be able to get much better as a passer downfield? And I think we're not going to find that out until, you know, the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you talked a lot about JT Barrett. Do you think, if you had to guess right now, he'll be the starter for Ohio State on Halloween? Or could you see them pulling him if he continues to struggle like he did against Oklahoma?
I can't see. I think it's a long shot that Urban Meyer would do that. He's so invested in this kid where, you know, he's the only three-time team captain in the storied history of Ohio State football. You know, this is a little different than what, you know, his situation at when he was at Florida and he had Chris Leak, who was a better passer, and mixed him in with Tim Tebow, who was obviously a huge recruit for them, and they were able to balance it. You know, the guy waiting in the wings, Dwayne Haskins, when we had Urban on our podcast on signing day in 2016, Urban Meyer said this was the best passer at that stage he'd ever seen. You know, so there is definitely something to that. Dwayne Haskins brings something that seems to be lacking in the Ohio State offense. The hard part of this, you know, looking at it from the outside in and not being at practice every day and not being in the meetings, you know, with the Ohio State staff, is to know really how ready Dwayne Haskins is at this point. And I think Urban Meyer talks a lot about being quote unquote game ready. And, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, I think you got to trust that Urban Meyer knows what's best for the program. But I think there's probably some people sitting there going, you know, you got to give Dwayne Haskins a shot at some point to see what he can do if this doesn't get a lot better. And I think right now, the margin for error has gotten a lot slimmer, you know, for that offense.
Sticking with the Big Ten, I'm a Wisconsin alum, and I, for a while, had the Wisconsin-Michigan game at Camp Randall on November 18th circled in my calendar. I've been of the belief that that game is going to have big college football playoff implications. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Wisconsin and their schedule, the way it sets up, Ryan, I mean, it's hard not to get pretty encouraged to see how this is going to be for them. I mean, it's just, you know, we just had Nebraska the other day at Oregon, and they need a lot of work on defense. Now, that game is in Lincoln. I think Tanner Lee is a talented quarterback, but just defensively, I think they're really lacking. I think people see with Wisconsin, you know, they lost one of the best players in the Big Ten before the start of the season, Jack Citchie at linebacker, but they're still really good. They're really good up front. I think Alex Hornibrook is very underrated. I think sometimes people just kind of like shrug their shoulders at what they see in the Big Ten West. You know, my sleeper in that going into the year in the Big Ten West was Nebraska. I thought their defense would quite honestly be better. I think when you look at what Wisconsin has, I feel like they're the safest pick. I mean, I'm not sure. I think I could see them winning a playoff game, but they don't beat themselves. They're just a very well-coached team, and I think people really have to give Paul Chryst a lot of respect and credit for what he's been able to do there.
Regarding Michigan, I'm not going to say there's been rumors, because I don't think there's been anything that's been sourced, but there have been people starting to look at Jim Harbaugh intellectually and saying, he only lasts 3 or 4 years per job. It looks like the Colts are going to need a new coach next year. He coached Andrew Luck to a lot of success in college. Could you fathom a circumstance where Jim Harbaugh is the coach of the Colts in 2018?
I mean, I would never say never to anything. You know, having said that, you know, it's true. He has not stayed anywhere for too long. Now, obviously, he left the University of San Diego for a bigger job to go to Stanford. I think there were some challenges there that, you know, he wasn't going to stay there. Obviously, with the Niners, I think the thing, and this is from talking to people pretty close to Jim Harbaugh, that ultimately may lure him back to the NFL is if he has the chance to control personnel as well as coach and get the whole, you know, somebody gives him the whole deal at that point. But this is his alma mater. He has a special connection to Michigan. And I think he knows he's building something pretty big there. I would be surprised if he would bail out of there after 3 years. You know, I mean, even if they beat Ohio State this year, which is still a pretty big if, I think this team is probably a year away from being where he hopes they would be personnel wise. You know, so I don't know if he's gonna hit the eject button that soon, but you know, you can never say never with these scenarios. But I just think Michigan is a different dynamic for him than maybe these other jobs he's had, and I think he's still got a lot of stuff to prove, not just probably to skeptics, but maybe even to himself about what he can do there, because, you know, he has recruited really well. They've made a big time commitment to the staff in terms of what they're paying a lot of these guys. And I think just to get in and out of there and try to build it up and leave it for somebody else, I'm not sure that sounds like something he would probably want to do.
Now going over to our producer, Mike Schamberger's favorite program, LSU. You literally wrote the book on Ed Orgeron at Ole Miss Meat Market, which is a great look into how some of these big schools do recruiting. Now, earlier this summer, Paul Feinbaum mentioned what Ed Orgeron was doing with journalists at LSU and said that this was the type of paranoia that held Coach O back at Ole Miss. How do you see his tenure at LSU going?
Well, Ryan, I think he's a dramatically different guy than the guy I was around for 2 years in Oxford, you know. And back then, he just did not trust his assistants. He didn't trust his staff. I thought there was the paranoia word. There was definitely something there to that, especially back then. And if you look, The one thing that the guy before him at Ole Miss, David Cutcliffe, and the guy, after him, Houston Nutt, had in common, all three guys have in common, the one thing is that they all didn't trust Pete Boone, who was their AD. And I think when you have that kind of paranoia and the lack of trust, especially in a guy like that, it's his first time as a head coach, you know, he didn't trust his staff. I just think it went sideways in a hurry. You know, every day when I was there, every week, was such a roller coaster ride. Whenever I would go somewhere else and somebody would say, hey, have you ever seen anybody go as hard as we do? And I would say, yeah, I was around Ole Miss. It didn't work then. You know, they were as physical as could be at practice, and it was a constant grind, and it was just a roller coaster ride. And they would end up playing pretty well and hard on Saturdays, especially considering they didn't have a quarterback. But when he came out of that, I think he had to realize, because it was turned out to be such a spectacular failure, and then, you know, he knew he could go back to life as a defensive line coach and as a recruiter. And when he got the job as the interim, when Lane Kiffin got fired at USC, and I live in Los Angeles, I was around him quite a bit then, and we had talked a lot, I saw a big difference in it. He not only was going to do the opposite of what Lane did, because a lot of times that's what happens with coaching transitions when it doesn't work. You kind of do the opposite of what was there. And so he did the opposite of what Lane did. He did a lot of things that were the opposite of how he coached at Ole Miss. And I've seen this transformation, even from the time he left USC to now in Baton Rouge. He knows that he's got a great job now, you know, and he's going to be the guy who is the guy that connected with players in the recruiting process and not the guy every day who coached them like he coached the D-line. And I think he's smart enough to know, I can motivate as well as anybody. I can certainly recruit as well as anybody. Because he's not making a fortune by SEC head coach standards, a lot of that money went to defensive coordinator Dave Aranda, who's as good as there is at that. And then he went out and hired Matt Canada for the offensive side, and he's very creative. And, you know, for LSU fans' sake, hopefully can put a jolt into an offense that has been really stagnant. And I think you see it he's just so much different now than he was, you know, just a few years ago, and certainly 10 years ago. And I'm very curious to see how this is going to play out, going forward, because they certainly have a lot of talent. They don't have quite as much as Alabama, but I think this is going to work pretty well. Now the question is, what exactly is pretty well by LSU standards? I mean, Les Miles won a lot. He got fired. So does pretty well mean you got to get to the playoff within 4 years? Yeah, I think that's the case. And at some point, you're going to have to beat Alabama, and that's a tall order.
Right now, September 12th, if you had to pick a national champion this year not named Alabama, who would it be?
Oh, man. If you'd asked me a week ago, I would have said Ohio State. But I thought JT Barrett with the staff around them would have gotten its, you know, solved. I know Clemson was dominant on defense and had, you know, 11 sacks against Auburn, and it's what should have been a pretty good offense. I'm still skeptical. I think they're good, but I just think missing Deshaun Watson and everything he brought from a leadership and playmaking ability and consistency, you know, I think they're going to miss him. If I had to pick a team, you know, right now for me, it's Alabama or bust. But I think Washington is a dangerous team because Chris Peterson's such a good coach. They're physical and on the D-line. I think Jake Browning is a better quarterback than what he showed at the end of last year when he's pretty banged up. They can run the ball. They have an experienced O-line. I still don't think they have enough talent to match up physically with Alabama. But, you know, as we saw from Clemson, now Clemson definitely has different level athletes. You know, you get Alabama the second time, even though that matchup was certainly closer the first time than the Washington game was, I think you have a chance. I mean, if I'm pressed for it, I would say keep an eye on Washington. Short of that, like when I go through the conferences in my head, I just don't know if the Big 12 teams, and I think they're great on offense, both Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, still don't know if they have enough on defense. But I got to say, from watching both of them in person this year already, I think they have a puncher's chance because – they are so good on offense. I mean, Baker Mayfield and that O-line at OU are terrific. And nobody has more weapons at his disposal than Mason Rudolph at Oklahoma State. It's just, you know, they're going to have to beat people. Certainly Oklahoma State, they're going to have to beat a good team like 49-42. And I don't know if you can do that to make it to the title game. You may be able to win a playoff game, Matt. It's hard to do it that far. But I would say, you know, the teams to keep an eye on are those two Oklahoma schools.
When you look at the Heisman odds, the top five are all quarterbacks: Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Mason Rudolph, Josh Rosen. Who's the best player in the country that's not a quarterback right now?
Saquon Barkley. He's a fantastic athlete. He is at everything. Great character guy. He's a big physical back. He's got an incredible work ethic. He's a good receiver. He's now involved in the return game. And he's in an offensive system that really showcases him and complements him well because they have big athletic receivers. Trace McSorley is not physically what NFL people look for in a quarterback. He's very good, and he fits the offense well. And I think Joe Moorhead is right now is as good an offensive coordinator as in the country. And I do think Saquon has a legit chance to win the Heisman because when you look what he's got in the middle of the schedule, they have a double where they go, where they host Michigan, and then they got to go to Ohio State. Now, if they can win both of those games, Penn State's not just a team that would have a shot to do damage in the playoff, but I think he would come out of there as the favorite, you know. But that's a big if. You know, look, if Lamar Jackson goes off against Clemson, you know, Lamar Jackson hype is going to build way back up after people, including myself, are going, you just can't win a Heisman, you know, back-to-back in this day and age. Archie Griffin did it 40-plus years ago. It's a different era. But if you're saying – you know, if you're saying somebody who's not a quarterback, to me, Saquon Barkley is your guy.
Let's move to discussing your own career. So you've carved out a niche recently, as we mentioned at the beginning, as a sideline reporter. What percent of the content that you prepare to discuss on air winds up making it between like pregame preparation and when the game airs?
I would say it's usually between 25% and 50%. There may be a few things that, like, I work with Joe Davis and Brady Quinn. There may be a couple of things that, you know, I may work on that, you know, it may not be me saying it. It may be Joe or Brady, and that's all good because, you know, I just want us to have the best broadcast possible. I usually go in. I don't know if it's a little different from how other sideline reporters prepare, but what I usually do is I will try to talk to as many people, coaches and personnel people as I can going into a game, whether it's, you know, we have Army this week and I haven't, you know, ever, you know, had one of their games. So I talked to coaches who faced them recently. And a lot of times I'll go through that and I'll prepare, maybe it's 14 or 16 items that if in the course of the game, it works great. If it doesn't, you know, sometimes things happen. In one of our games earlier this year, probably the best offensive guard in the country is a guy named Will Hernandez. He plays at UTEP. And I had a lot of stuff on him. And we were going to come back to revisit a story. And it was like, okay. And the producer in my ear, Bo Garrett, said, okay, on the next, after this play, we'll come back to you. Well, that play was a fumble. You know, Oklahoma got the ball back and we never got a chance to, you know, that was it for that part of the Will Hernandez story. Cause I don't know if he was back in the next series. I think he might've been out and they just pulled their starters, but so that happens, and I think you just have to be prepared, and you go with, you go with the flow, and it helps. You know, I mean, I cover college football all year round, but you know, I remember a couple of years ago, I had a game where it was Arizona State, and there was a player in there who I don't think I don't even know if we expected him to play, but just because I, cover the sport enough, I was pretty familiar with his background, so I had plenty of stuff to add, and you just got to be flexible. And so I just try to prepare as much as I can, but knowing that sometimes these things may not get on, and who knows, maybe I'll have a chance to get them on if we have that team later in the season.
You do a weekly top 10 for SI, but you're on the air, as we mentioned, for 3 hours, could be in the middle of the day, could be whenever. How do you keep up with all the games that are happening on a college football Saturday, on a day where you're also intimately involved in a single game broadcast?
Yeah, that's the biggest challenge. And I think what I have to do, like last weekend, our game was in, pretty much in the middle of the day after it was over. Unfortunately, unlike you know, the old days when I would was writing from a press box, as soon as the game's over and I do my post-game interviews, I'm out of there and we're, you know, I go back to the hotel. You know, the other day we were in Eugene and Brady Quinn and I ended up, you know, getting some takeout and just, you know, we had a big room. We just sat and watched games, but it's hard because I think there's been games where, like, for instance, the first week I didn't see any of the Michigan Florida game live because it was up against our game. So, you know, you watch highlights and maybe you talk to some other people, you know, who you trust. But there's going to be some holes there. And again, it's different from how it used to be for me, but you know, there are times if you go cover a game and you ask any sports writer, they may be out, you know, like they're writing about a story. You still have a window of games you miss. Sometimes if you're sitting on your couch, you see way more than you do if you go cover a game, just because you're so locked in on your game. Even if you're looking down at a second screen while you're sitting in the press box, it's just really hard. In my case, you know, like it's not even just that 3.5 hour window. I'm usually on the field 2 hours before a kickoff because maybe I have some pregame stuff, but I'm gathering stuff in warm-ups and walkthroughs and warm-ups. So it's just, you know, that's a lot of stuff I'm not able to see.
What was the element of being a sideline reporter that surprised you the most once you started doing that role?
I think there's a couple of things. Just the game, I know this from covering it, but just to be a part of it, the game moves so fast, and it's just such a challenge to get things in. Like, I've talked to, you know, friends who do sideline at other places, and I just ask them what their biggest challenge is. For me, it's been the discipline of, you know, I feel like I have good stuff, but you can't get to all of it. It's hard to get to a lot of it just because there's just not enough time. And the one thing I'm very sensitive to is I don't want to be talking over plays because I know the game is the most important thing. Now, if we get into a game where it's 41-7, you know, it's a little different, but just the pace is really just so different to see it, you know, from down there. And also I think that, just how hard it is for a broadcast, because there's so many moving parts and things go on so fast. You know, like I have my earpieces in before the game and I'm listening to what Joe and Brady are saying, but sometimes I don't know exactly, you know, what's going on the broadcast because I'm listening, but I usually can't see it. So there's just a lot of moving parts to it. And I think that's one of the things that has been a real adrenaline rush is to see it. You know, you feel way more like a team than I did in any other aspect of, you know, my job to this point in my career, just because, you know, you have an editor and, you know, they help you, but it's just not, the same. You know, it's just, there's an adrenaline rush and there's just a lot of stuff that goes into it.
You mentioned the pacing of the game being fast. I'd argue that college football games take too long. Some of them can be 4 hours between long halftime and clock stopping on first downs. Is there anything you'd advocate to speed up the games?
There is. I would prefer that they would not have the clock stoppage after first downs, because that to me really slows the game down, especially with a lot of the offenses you have now where you'll have 28, 32 first downs for a team. You know, that really drags on and on. You know, because it's not like the half times are that long, whether you get, you know, 3 extra minutes or what. It's just, you're already going to have, because teams throw it plenty, you're already going to have some stoppages from incomplete passes. But just that aspect of it, it's just like, if they could do something about that, if they decided, hey, we're just going to run the clock after, as opposed to stopping the clock on the first downs, I think that would probably make a little bit of a noticeable difference in the length of the games.
So obviously you used to work at ESPN, now you're at Fox. Do you have any observations about the ongoing PR war that these companies, PR people are having with each other?
Not really. I mean, you know, like I'm on social media too, and it's just like, look, a lot of my friends, closer friends are still at ESPN. So, you know, I don't take it personal with that. I still think, you know, in a lot of ways that, you know, what they do is really good. And there are a lot of smart, hardworking people there. a lot of really talented people at Fox. I just think sometimes I cringe a little bit where, I don't want to say this is like people fanning the flames, but, you know, there's like, it's not like Kevin Burkhart or Rob Stone or myself or Joe Davis or like dozens of other people are like poking ESPN. You know, it's not like this was like some kind of coordinated, hey, we're going to get them. I mean, it's, I feel like, you know, it's been a few people and it's not, you know, it's, you know, I worked with Clay Travis for a while, but it's like that, I feel like that's somewhere that stems from. So it's interesting to see how this is kind of, I don't want to say exploded, but just kind of gone in that direction. And like I said, I think there's a lot of really good people on both sides of it. I don't feel like it's a war or anything like that. You know, I have a lot of respect, like I said, for the product they have. And I think from the people I know who are over there, I think it feels the same way. So, like, I'm just sensitive to people thinking it's like, oh, it's all these FS1 and Fox people are dumping on ESPN or dumping on competitors every chance they get.
Is there anything we didn't talk about either in the national college football landscape or pertaining to your job as a sideline reporter and a writer that we didn't discuss that you think is really interesting right now?
No, I think just the landscape as it's shifted, you know, media-wise as reporters, I think you got, you know, years ago, certainly when I was at ESPN, I'd get a lot of email from people in college saying, hey, what, you know, looking for advice, how do I get to do what you do or, you know, get to where you are? And I think you got to be really flexible because it has shifted so much in 10 years. I mean, it's shifted a lot in just 5 years, but certainly in 10 years. And, you know, for people who are trying to come up in the business, I would just caution them, you know, there's still opportunity out there, but you just really got to be flexible. I mean, I look at my own career path. When I started at ESPN.com, it wasn't even ESPN.com in the early, you know, mid-90s, just I didn't know where it was going. I just, you know, felt like I was in a good company at a place I wanted to be. And I was, you know, working in sports, which was everything I wanted. You know, eventually I got to ESPN magazine. At that point, I wanted to write features and tell stories that way. And I liked doing it. But after a while, I think I had an opportunity to go in one of two directions. You know, one of my bosses at the magazine said, you can go be an enterprise writer and we like those stories you're getting, or you can be our college football guy. And I looked around the landscape at ESPN and saw, you know, Chris Mortensen and some guys like that in other sports. I felt like there was a lot more stability and it was a lot more intriguing to do that. And at least for me, you know, I know a lot of other people may look at it the other way, but for me it was that way. And, you know, it was all about developing relationships to get more wired and plugged into, you know, the college football beat. And then when I got to Fox, there was a shift there too. And, you know, it became an opportunity to jump into sideline reporting. And I really love what I'm doing now. I can't wait to get on the road and can't wait to work with our crew and do those games. So it's changed. But I think the thing that's important is just to be flexible, you know, and to be willing to embrace whatever kind of gets thrown at you. And just, you know, if you love what you do, you know, it just find a way to keep doing it or keep doing it as best you can.
Thanks, Bruce. We really appreciate your time. Good luck the rest of the season. Hope to talk to you again down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, bye.
Strange.